Folks, this show is sponsored by 1776 Insurance. We're talking about comprehensive firearms collection coverage. That also includes your accessories as well as knives. If you've got questions or you want to learn more, please visit 1776insurance.com. All right, howdy folks. I'm Jeff Gonzalez, former Navy SEAL, founder of Trident Concepts and host of the Bulletproof Workshop powered by AR15.com, where we discuss knowledge, skills, and ability to help bulletproof your everyday performance in whatever your field or passion. Welcome to Podcast 032. My next guest hails from across the big blue, where he was a semi-pro athlete and fitness fanatic. He's established himself as an elite level performance and mindset coach. He hosts one of UK's leading podcasts, Take Flight, where he works at providing actionable takeaways from his guests' experiences. The podcast has been a journey of discovery on how to overcome some of the mental shackles that were holding him back. Driven to inspire people to be better each day, he's narrowed in on daily habits and philosophies of successful people. He's a father, football player, mascot free university graduate, which I'll talk about, fellow podcaster, and fresh jiu-jitsu athlete. Please welcome to the show, Mark Whittle. Mark, thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me, Jeff. Yes. Very happy to be here.
Yes. So we're on a kind of like a fast track. Normally, I like to talk about where you hail from and kind of like what the beginning of your journey was like. And usually we kind of focus on the childhood, like if there was something unique in your childhood that kind of set you on this path. Mm-hmm. I know that you had a love for sports and that kind of propelled you in a trajectory that eventually got you here. Did you ever think that you would be sitting there because of your love for sports?
Sitting where?
Sitting in a successful podcaster, okay. A coach that now helps other people to find their elite level performance.
I'd never thought I'd be a coach because I was far too selfish as a kid.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think a lot of us are, right? The world exists around us.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Certainly in my youth, you know, it was all about me winning, me succeeding. So I couldn't imagine helping other people.
Yeah, but you played on teams too. That's such a...
Yeah,
you...
but I was a striker.
Oh,
I wanted to score.
It was all about me. I get it.
For sure. Like, yeah. You know, I reflect back and laugh at myself. If we lost 2-1 and I scored the one, I was happy.
You win.
Yeah.
The rest of the team didn't do their job.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's awesome. So... selfishness kind of was the word of the day back then, but when did that change?
When you realize that being selfish doesn't make you happy.
Oh.
And connection to other people and lifting other people is far more rewarding. It's like the moment when you open all your Christmas presents and you never feel that void of you never satisfy that void feeling.
Yeah.
And then you give someone a Christmas present and you watch them open it and the joy that they experience.
For sure.
You realize that, hold on a minute, I can find joy in other people's experiences. And that's what I spend 99% of my time doing now.
So when was that like a pivotal moment, like a watershed moment when it happened? Do you recall when that happened? Like, was it one unique experience with a person that you can recall?
No. I think it happened over time. And it's hard to break like lifelong patterns and habits and ways
boy.
Of thinking.
Yeah.
So there's been a number of like heavier experiences, which those are the ones that force us to change, right? Like this pleasure and pain paradox.
Oh my God.
So we can.
So true.
Yeah. And we can look at other people and importantly ourselves and predict behavior by understanding A, what we define as pleasure.
Yeah.
So like, okay, what do I find pleasurable? I like exercising.
Yeah.
So I'm probably going to exercise most days a week.
Okay.
Like I like, you know, what else I define as pleasure? I like nice clothes. I like meeting great people.
Yeah.
I like helping people like that. I find that pleasurable. So that's going to be a great predictor of my behavior.
Nice.
But the only thing that predicts humans' behavior more than pleasure is our need to avoid pain.
Oh man, so true.
So that feeling of the pain outweighing the pleasure. And for me, that has happened a number of times in my life where things got painful enough that I was like, fuck this. I need to change.
Yeah. So as you discover, and it's interesting, that I believe is 100% human nature. We'll do, you know, we'll probably make a few good decisions to find pleasure, but we'll move mountains to avoid pain.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting to see that. I guess that's just, you know, survival instincts of sorts.
I could even do that on the micro. Like, why am I here? Because it's causing me a little bit of pain because I've got a talk, which I'm a little bit worried about.
Oh, really?
That I want to do really well, right? So it's caused me a little bit of pain to come here and be like, right, I probably should be focusing a bit more on my talk later. But the bigger pain is if I don't reach my potential,
yeah,
that's going to cause me a lot of pain in my life. Yeah. So every opportunity that presents itself, I'm gonna act on. Yeah,
you know, I love that because you know you kind of put regret behind you, mm-hmm. and you focus on the now. You focus on what can I achieve? Where you know, like at that point, you've removed self-imposed limits.
Yeah,
and so you know when we get back to pain, another way to look at pain is comfort. And we had a little conversation before we went live about getting comfortable being uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And so you've kind of taken on some new, especially recently, awkwardness or uncomfortability. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. So like a big part of what I believe in my philosophies is for us to grow as humans, we have to step outside of our comfort zone. Like you know that.
Yeah.
People who are listening to that will know that. And when you build enough evidence for yourself that stepping into discomfort helps you grow, mm-hmm. helps you be a better person, mm-hmm. and for me, helps me help others grow as well. Like I try to put myself in those situations as much as possible.
Yeah.
So this week, having never practiced jiu-jitsu in my entire life, I mean ever, never even walked into a dojo before.
Yes.
I stepped in for my first jiu-jitsu class at Roka with John Danaher, you know, like one of the greatest coaches in MMA of all time.
Ever,
And rolled with a bunch of black belts. Gordon Ryan was there.
Oh, wow.
You know, incredible group of people.
Oh,
so
for
that
sure.
was my first experience. And then 2 days later, I stepped into this building and rolled with Tim Kennedy, former UFC, you know, just like, but all incredible humans.
Absolutely.
And so welcoming. And,
it's true. And so like the hard part about trying to convince people that there is tremendous value in stepping outside of your comfort zone. Like that's, you and I understand that because we've experienced it. We've also seen the value, the positivity that it brings. It doesn't feel that way at first because there's so much emotion that's just pushing back at you saying, no, don't do this.
Yeah.
Like, what are some, like, what was the, like, I know that for you, it was like, okay, pain showed me this. I need to get more comfortable being uncomfortable. But when you talk to other elite level performers, what have they found? Like, what are their cheat codes to trying to say, shut that part of their brain off that's telling them no, and just say, do it?
Yeah. So there's a couple of ways to answer this question. There's a way to look at discomfort, which can help us to manage what it is that we're trying to push ourselves into, right? So for me, stepping into the jiu-jitsu on day one, that was probably at the edge of what I would want to do. If you go any further than that, the stressor becomes too much and then it is overwhelming and you don't enjoy it and you don't learn and you're not present and the stimulus is too much and it's not good for you.
Yes.
That's too uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So there's this kind of range between like being super comfortable.
Yeah.
Slightly outside your comfort zone. And then there's this kind of like what they call the growth zone, right?
Ooh.
Where you're in between that window.
Okay.
So look, I love all of that shit.
Yeah.
Right. So I was so, so excited
to
step into what is an elite performance center.
Yeah. For
the best
sure.
in the world.
Yeah,
right?
For sure.
So privileged.
Yeah.
Like, I get so many messages and I get a little bit of guilt because all these people who practice jiu-jitsu all the time are like, how
did you do that?
This? Yeah. So like, I've got, you know, I realize how fortunate I am. So there's part of that. But also, you know, I understand enough that I'm going to be safe. They're not going to kill me. In fact, my worst experience doing jiu-jitsu so far was with the blue belt who've clearly had something to prove.
Oh.
So, you know, but, and that's natural. All the elite guys made it hard for me.
Yeah.
Tim made it very hard for me.
Oh yeah.
But he didn't want to hurt me.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, you know, he's good at that. He's really good. He knows exactly how much pressure to put on you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's certainly a window and, you know, where people make mistakes is they go, right, I'm getting out of my comfort zone and charge into something like with so much ignorance that then the evidence then becomes, right, I can't push myself out of my comfort zone because that's bad for me then. So you've got to ease into it. It's like this stepping stone.
Interesting. You know, and it's funny because that just seems so common sense or natural to do, but yet I think you're right.
Most of what I teach is so common sense. Yeah.
But I can tell you, I can say, you know what? Sometimes to get myself to commit to something that I'm not comfortable with, I've got to go all in.
Yeah.
And I don't have that metered approach towards, okay, let's just baby step this.
But that's a great, great point, right?
Okay.
Because let's use the example we just spoke about before, press and record. I said, Jeff, something I've never done before is shoot a gun.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm in Texas.
Yeah.
I have to do it before we leave.
Absolutely.
That brings an element of fear, which might sound strange to people listening from Texas, but I've never held a, I've done clay pigeon shooting in the English countryside.
Yes.
But I've never shot a gun. It certainly brings an element of fear. In fact, I was with my client the other day and I saw a safe in their house, which had about 30 guns. And I felt a little bit unsettled about that, like a little bit strange. It's just so far away from my culture, right?
Right.
So I have a lot of fear around going to shoot the guns.
Okay.
But I also understand that there will be safety measures in place. Mm-hmm. I know enough about myself that I'm going to be very present. I'm going to learn what's important to know when I go and do that for the first time.
Love it.
I'm going to be watching you, who's clearly very experienced, and all these other things that can make me find that growth zone.
Yeah.
Rather than just turning up, grabbing the gun and shooting it. You know?
Thank you for that. First of all, I appreciate that that approach. And you know, that's an interesting kind of segue too, because I think there's obviously a fear of the unknown, mm-hmm. right? And that fear of the unknown can sometimes be debilitating to so much potential, so much growth. How do you get past the fear of the unknown? What do you do to help navigate that?
When you realize that all of life's joy is in the unknown.
Yes.
You know, like how much can we really control?
Right.
Right. And realize that you like, when we can't control things. So like not knowing is the fun part. You know, if you read a book and you knew the finish, would you enjoy reading it?
Probably not. Yeah.
Nor not as much. You know, if you read it the first time, I'm English, so I'll use Harry Potter, right? I've read Harry Potter. I love Harry Potter.
Yes. So
I read it. Amazing.
Yeah.
Is it as good the second time? It's still great because I love the characters and I love the story arc and stuff, but I know what's happening.
Yeah.
So do I enjoy it as much? No.
Oh, wow. You know, that's so interesting. I never thought of it that way. I know actually what's funny is I'm pointing to you, Jim. I know a guy who literally will fast forward to the last chapter of the books and read that first. So
that tells me a lot about him.
Yeah,
already.
Exactly. Yeah.
Impatience.
Yes. Yes.
A need to control something. Need to know what happens.
I never thought about it like that. Yeah. Oh my God. Jim, we got you in our sights. I can't wait to see him again and talk to him about this. But that's a great point. The impatience. Because I am, man, dude, patience has been my hardest. Probably the character trait to develop in myself is patience. And if my father was listening to me, he used to say this to me all the time growing up. Be like, you know, if you take your time, you'll have time to do everything. Mm. And I was like, Dad, stupid, you know, like know it all myself back then. Dad, patience is for people who have time to waste.
Yeah.
That was my response. And now here I am talking to my kids. I have two boys and talking to them like, hey, man, just take it easy. Slow down. Be patient. You know? And in the back of my head, I can just see my dad. He's just smirking at me. He's just sitting there. He's like, mm-hmm. Yeah. Quick word from our sponsor. We've been working with the folks at 1776 for comprehensive insurance of our firearms collections. And I'm really happy with how things are going so far. And one of my concerns is with the amount of commuting that I do with my firearms collection. What happens should my vehicle be broken into or stolen with my firearms? And there's reason to have this concern because there's 800,000 vehicles stolen per year in America. So it's not, you know, it's a little bit more common than we might think. What I mentioned earlier is that they have a comprehensive insurance plan, which is that they will cover your firearms stolen out of your vehicle, or should your vehicle be stolen, cover the firearms that were in the vehicle. So that's pretty reassuring in a sense. So I've mentioned this before, but the process to apply is pretty easy. Approval is pretty quick. They do not require you provide a itemization or serialized numbers. There's no appraisal or schedules that you have to provide. So really all you want to do is just make sure you have proof of ownership and that's it. So if you want to learn more about the folks from 1776 and insuring your firearms collection, visit 1776insurance.com.
Patience has been a struggle for me.
Yeah,
and
likewise.
Really? Mm-hmm. Interesting. What have done to try to manage that?
When you realize that trying to force things just causes you suffering. Like I don't know if I want to use the word desperate, but I was so driven to achieve the thing I wanted to achieve that I would do everything and I would want it now. And I'd have the idea and I would want it now.
Yes.
Right. But then when you realize trying to force things doesn't work, a lot of the time the things we're trying to achieve will rely on timing, it will rely on a bit of luck, it will rely on other people.
Yeah.
And the more we try and force that, the less likely it is to happen.
Huh.
So an example is like, let's use a really basic one of trying to book a podcast guest, right? you know, which we know is it's more difficult than it sounds.
It is. But so true.
We're relying on so many moving parts. It's like, if I try and force that, I'm just going to cause myself stress and suffering.
God, man.
So if I just like take my hand off the wheel a little bit,
yeah,
and just let it happen. And I'm not saying don't do anything. I'm saying we still chase.
Yeah,
still,
yeah.
But like, I'm not putting someone in an I only learned this because I've done it wrong so many times.
Okay,
right?
Good.
Tried to force someone in like quick. I've got this date and this date only, get in, let's go. Yeah. And then eventually like, mate, I'm not doing it anymore. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
Or like whatever the thing is. So I think once you realize that, and I'm not saying I'm perfect at this, I still struggle with it all the time.
Nice.
But I can recognize now when I'm causing myself suffering, trying to force something to happen. And then I have to just, okay, step back. What can I control in this moment? All right, do those little bits then. Just reach out, but not trying to force anything.
It's so interesting to hear you say that because I hadn't thought of it from how it affects me.
Yeah.
Like I'm thinking of it from kind of like almost the opposite. Like, okay, I have to do this because this, if I don't do this, it affects me. But how you just explained it to me, that helps to kind of solve a couple riddles that have like, why am I freaking out? Like I'm freaking out that I can't, like you said, land this guest. And I'm like, well, maybe I need to try harder. Maybe I need to come at it from this angle. Maybe I need to do that.
Yeah.
And instead, but what I'm discovering as I listen to you is that that's actually like adding fuel to the fire.
Mm-hmm.
That's wigging me out. I'm getting more stressed, which means that I'm panicking more, which means that I'm trying to figure out other things to do, which is only going to compound the problem.
And which is only going to make them feel what you're feeling. The energy exchange, they'll feel that.
Oh man, I never thought of that one either.
Where, and the other thing is like, you keep this in mind then with what you're doing in the future, is like, they're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
I've had this a lot with brands and I'm like, I need this brand deal by like 6 weeks, but that's my timeline.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's not
theirs. Yes.
So it's like, they're not going anywhere. Likewise with guests, I've tried to meet people this week.
Yeah.
And in the past, I'd get upset or disappointed that I've not made it happen, right?
Yeah.
But now I'm like, they're not going anywhere.
Okay.
I'll come back to Austin again.
Oh, I hope so. Yeah. For sure. Oh man. Well, you know, the interesting thing about that perspective is that it opens you up for so many other opportunities that you might not have been able to see because you were so fixated on that one that you just kind of like put the blinders on. You don't see all the other stuff that potentially could be laying in wait for you that you can just shift a little bit and all of a sudden take advantage of.
Yeah.
And that's something that I try to convey. Like when we talk about patience and we talk about lack of patience, I see this and it's so funny that we're talking about it because I can see myself being very impatient. When I'm talking to a student and we're trying to like overcome I want to be good now model, I have to try to walk them through the process. And it's like fitness, like, you know, like you don't become fit overnight.
Mm.
It's a disciplined activity that you have to put time into.
Yeah.
And I try to share that with the students to try to help manage their expectations, but also to try to motivate them to recognize that this is within your grasp. You have control. You can dedicate whatever time you have to whatever the activity is. In this case, students that are learning to shoot. And I would say the success rate is like 50-50. Some people will be like, oh, okay. All right. You mean I don't have to be like a sharpshooter overnight? Like, buddy, if you could be a sharpshooter overnight, you would have my job. So there's that. But the other folks, the one thing that I find that is preventing them from experiencing that success is a lot of ego and pride.
Mm.
What is the secret to managing that?
Managing your ego.
Yeah.
Jeez, I wish I knew. No, I think that the moment, I don't think you ever get rid of it.
Okay.
I think ego's
good. I'm glad to hear you say that. Yeah.
I think ego is an important part for everybody.
Okay.
Right. From a survival perspective, right?
Interesting.
Yeah. Your ego, if you're going to, you know, I'm just going to walk across this road, your ego kicks in and says, don't fucking walk across the road.
Hopefully.
Yeah. But like, I think the moment that you realize that there's a bigger picture and it's not all about you, you know, it's that same like supporting others. That's kind of the further down point of that. Like, once we can realize that it's bigger than us.
Yeah.
You know, it's far bigger than us. And we can step back objectively from our own experience.
Mm-hmm.
So what I mean is like, as an individual, we have our own subjective experience, our own subjective perspective on events that happen on life. Everyone has their own unique version of that.
Right.
But when we can build the muscle to step back and be objective with our experience, and see it as if like how you could coach me on what I'm experiencing objectively because you don't feel it.
Yeah.
Very hard to do, but we're basically asking ourselves to detach from the emotional experience in the moment.
Yeah.
Right?
That's tough.
And what we do, well, Viktor Frankl said, suffering ceases to be suffering the moment it has a meaning.
Oh, wow.
So that's a really nice way to use that, is like, whatever the suffering thing is, usually it's the ego that's going to cause the suffering.
Yeah.
Event happens, ego kicks in, emotional reaction. Either learn the muscle of stepping back or ask yourself the right questions, which a great one is like, okay, well, what does this mean? Why has this happened? Why is this thing canceled today? Or like, why is this? And that is like, the best thing about that is repetition then makes like concrete for you. Like, this is a really like basic example, but someone I was supposed to do a podcast with on Tuesday canceled. They couldn't do it. Life happens. They've got a big brand. They go into do prep for the Super Bowl in Vegas. Or yeah. I think it's in Vegas this year, right?
Phoenix.
Oh, Phoenix.
Yeah, because okay. I'm going to be there this weekend. This weekend. I'm going to be there on Sunday night. So, I get to get passed through the airport with all the folks leaving and coming. So it'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah. But like, even in that moment, you can say, well, what meaning can I give to this to not suffer as much?
You mean like me traveling on the day of the Super Bowl? Yeah. So it wasn't planned. Unfortunately, my schedule is like usually a year out. So I didn't realize that this was Super Bowl weekend. Had I known that, I probably would not be traveling to Phoenix, the home of the Super Bowl for this year, on that weekend. But, you know, looking at it, taking a step back and kind of thinking about some of the stuff that we've just talked about, there'll probably be a lot of people that I might run into that I wouldn't have on that day had I not planned for that. So you never know. I mean, that's the thing, just listening right now, trying to find opportunity out of every, you know, maybe changing the perspective that, okay, yeah, it's going to suck. There's going to be a lot of people there, but I might actually run into somebody that could potentially be a new guest or, you know, we have a collab together with on something that, you know, maybe turns into something down the road. And I think as I age, I get a little bit more, I guess, open to those types of new events, new opportunities.
Because what does opportunity do for you?
For me, opportunity can be, well, a new guest. It could be a new direction to go in my career that, you know, like at this point too, that's the other thing that's interesting. I'm open to opportunities.
And how does opportunity make you feel?
It makes me feel good because it brings a positive emotion to me because I live in that moment where I get to problem solve. I get to challenge myself with new things. I get to learn about, like in this case, as a podcast host, this is new to me. I've learned so much. And it sparked something in my brain that was not dormant, but it didn't have to do a lot of lifting in my other career because that's just so natural, so automated to me at this point.
You see your energy shift from I'm going to be traveling totally. The day as far, and then it's but look what this is what it does for me.
Oh, yeah. Your little mind control trick worked on me there. That's very good. Very good. Well done.
It's your mind control trick.
That's true. All right. So you've been traveling pretty much the world and helping people across the globe to find that next level of performance, whatever it might be. I know that you've probably started to pick up some trends and some patterns. What are some of the ones that that really stand out to you?
Well, what pissed me off was that I couldn't find any for a long time.
Man, that's so interesting.
I started the show 5 years ago, like a couple of weeks was the anniversary, 5 years ago.
Oh, no shit. Yeah. Wow, 5 years.
And what I wanted was, again, ego. I wanted a black and white X equals Y for performance and success.
Hell yeah.
And
totally.
I couldn't find it. And every time I thought I'd found it, I would get a different response or a different answer from someone else. And it started to really get like wind me up a little bit. That's an English phrase for getting frustrated.
Ah, gotcha. Like that.
So I actually took a break from it for a while because it was irritating me. And I was trying to control the outcome of this like equation.
Wanted it to go a direction and it was going its own direction. Interesting. Yeah.
So what would happen? I'd meet someone like me and then I'd find this pattern again. I'd be like, right, cool. Yeah. That's the type of person. That's the formula. That's how it works. And then I'd see someone else who did it in a completely different way.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I just realized everyone's so uniquely different and does things their own way.
Yeah.
So then I started it again and I came with a new approach. I kind of tried to that whole letting your hand off the wheel thing. I'm not trying to control and steer. And I did come up with a kind of a little bit of a formula for success, but it comes in the form of questions. Why questions? Because questions can be answered by the unique individual in their own way.
Yeah.
So it can be applied across the board. So the formula I found for performance or happiness, whatever you want to call it, is these three questions. And that's, who are you?
Oh.
So that's where we always start. I realized that, you know, you spoke earlier about the importance of understanding the child and how it's impacted us and made us the person that we are today. So grasping truly who we are, which is hard because it's a moving target because we change.
Yeah, so true.
But at least having the ability to tap into that and being more aware of who you are, strengths, weaknesses, traumas, you know, behavior patterns, thought patterns, all of those things. And it's deep work. That's the hardest part.
For sure.
So you do the who are you.
Yeah.
Right. And then when you get a little bit of a better understanding about that and more aware, more conscious of yourself in the world, because too much of us spend our emphasis on external other people. Right.
Yeah.
So bring it back to you.
Yeah.
So who am I? The next one is, who do I want to be?
Love that one.
So who do I want to be is all the things around goal setting and accountability you know, all that sort of stuff. Yeah. Like, who do I want to be?
Yeah.
Am I happy with who I am right now? Who do I want to be?
I gotcha.
Right?
Yeah.
So who do I want to be? And getting clarity on the way where we're moving. And then what do I do next? The actionable tangibles. What do I do next?
I love that.
So that's a formula for performance across the board. So who am I?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. And then you can see the strengths, the weaknesses, the places to improve and grow, the things to double down on.
I love that.
Who do I want to be?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Am I satisfied with who I am? Is this where I want to be? No, I want to be this place. Okay, cool. Well, what do I do next? And it's as simple as that.
Man, I love that. I know you say it's simple, but it took some time to find that.
Yeah, 5 years. Yeah.
But the beauty behind that is, like, it's very impacting, because you do have to, like, I think the first question, like you said, is the most powerful question. Mm-hmm. Like, who really are you? And as I was kind of mulling that over in my head, I'm like, okay, I'm going to sit down and start really thinking through that. We have ideas about who we are, but really kind of like bringing it out and kind of putting it in a like more definitive terms of sorts. Like, we might have this floating consciousness of who we are, but really kind of putting it in more concrete terms, I think, is something that everybody can benefit from. Mm. I love the future vision aspect. Like, where do I want to go? Like, the sky's the limit. Mm-hmm. You know, really, self-imposed limits are the killer for so many people. And that actionable task, just to, you know, like, the hardest step of any journey is that first one, mm-hmm. taking that first step. I love that. And, man, it's brilliant. It really is.
Thanks, man.
Let me ask you this. You know, we've got a few more minutes, and I like to try to kind of circle back to two questions that for me have always been really interesting to hear from our guests. And the first one is, like, was there a mentor that gave you, like, a really impactful piece of advice that is still with you today? Did the mentor kind of, like, help? Was there a mentor in the first place that kind of helped guide you on this journey?
I've had a ton.
I love that.
Yeah. I've had a load of them, you know, however you define a mentor. Like, some of my mentors have been dead for years. I've just read their books. I've never met them.
Oh, I love that.
And learned from them.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, people who have been a few years ahead of me in business that I've learned from, but, like, I'd say one of the biggest ones was my dad.
Nice.
And the thing that he, as I was growing up, you know, those sort of the 20s when you're going through that painful period of, like, figuring out what you want to do, right? And getting
going
it wrong.
Through my son right now.
Yeah. Okay. But you're getting it wrong.
Yeah.
A lot.
Right? Oh, yeah.
So I used to value the wrong things. So I'd chase, like, money or success or validation.
Uh-huh.
So every time I would achieve something, I would feel flat. I wouldn't have the feeling that I anticipated feeling.
Interesting.
So it happened every other year, and I'd ring my dad and be like, fuck, I've done it again. Like, I've just achieved this thing, dad.
Big thing.
Yeah. And I don't feel anything. Like, what's going on? And he just said, Mark, sometimes you got to find new mountains. And at the time I was like, okay, cool. I just need to find another goal and go and smash it.
Right.
But what he really meant, the deeper meaning of it, was I was climbing the wrong one. But he didn't tell me that.
No, of course
I had
not.
To figure that thing out the second bit. So I was like, right, well, I'll just go and earn more money over here. It was like, no, keep climbing the mountains until you find the right one.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
That's a great one. All right. This is one of my favorite questions, which is, how do you deal with failure?
How do I deal with failure? I mean, there's nothing else to do other than just keep going, right?
That's one way. That's a way of dealing with it, for sure. But it's surprising that not everybody looks at it that way. Not everybody sees it. This I know it seems like in your mind right now, you're probably thinking, well, that's just such an obvious question. You just keep going.
Yeah.
But it seems not always. Is that the simple, like, I guess in your, where you're at in your life, through all of the, through all the filters that you've passed, your connection with failure is clear, but your purpose behind what failure means to you is also clear. Mm. And it's become kind of more innate in you. It's like, oh, yep, I just, now I shift over here. It's not quite as debilitating, I think, for you as it is for a lot of other people. That's at least an opinion that I have.
Yeah, no, thanks, Jeff. I do certainly realize I'm in a bubble. It's interesting. We were with, I don't know if you're familiar with Matt Choi. He's an endurance runner who's based in Austin.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, really great guy. So we went running with him yesterday and did a podcast. Nice. And then we went for dinner last night. And he took me to a facility called The Collective, which is in Austin, a really, really great gym owned by a former NFL player.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he showed us the ice bath and the sauna space and all this. And I have my setup of this at home in England as well. So I'm a big believer in all these practices.
Yeah.
And I was looking at them, there's two ice baths and two saunas. And I was like, yeah, but Matt, there's only two. Aren't they just like super busy? Like, how do they even manage it? Aren't people like queuing to use it? He's like, Mark, not everyone does ice and sauna.
Yeah.
And I was like, and sometimes I have to remind myself that my views and my behaviors and all that, like I'm in my own little bubble.
A little sometimes. Different, yeah.
But like to come back to the failure question, I think that's a repetition thing of feeling failure. And before it was probably fueled with negative emotion. Fail, get pissed off, go and prove someone wrong.
Yeah.
Fail, get pissed off, go and prove someone wrong.
Yeah.
And that was fine and it worked. But again, when we returned to us, it caused me a lot of suffering in the middle.
Yeah.
That middle period was not fun.
Yeah.
So now it's just like fail. I don't call it failure. I don't even really have like I don't pick it up as a failure. It's just like something that's happened and a chance to find a new way to do something. And actually, the more obstacles that are put in the way, the better, because it fast tracks my learning anyway.
Mm-hmm. It's so true. Like we talk about that in our classes. Like I want my students to fail fast and fail frequently.
Yeah.
Those are like the two things that don't be afraid to fail on the firing line for us. And what I mean by that is like to miss the target, you know, because what that's doing is that's hindering my ability to diagnose what's going on.
Mm.
If we just kind of proceed, follow the program, I'll be able to kind of nitinoid, pick out what's not working and change it. And then you're on the track a lot faster. In other words, you're going to get to your goal a lot faster if you actually welcome failure now, early on.
Do you know the thing that I enjoy so much about doing firsts and like stepping into a dojo for the first time is that the growth is astronomical. Mm. Like it's such a steep growth curve.
Huge.
That doesn't happen ever again.
No.
So
no.
That discomfort
is a
way, another way to look at it is like, I'm going to learn so much today.
Yeah.
It's going to be scary. It's going to bring all the other baggage that it has with it. But I'm going to learn so much today. The second time, I'm glad I had the first time because then I rolled with Tim.
Yeah.
The second time, I knew a bit more.
Yeah, yeah.
And like the growth curve wasn't as big as it was the time before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of sometimes, that's also the intoxicating aspect of it. Like, you know, there's going to be so much coming at you. You're like, oh, I love this. And then the next time it's just a little less. And then the next time a little less.
Yeah.
So you try to find something else to kind of get you that same hit, if you will, that dopamine hit.
There's a phrase called hedonic habituation.
Say that again.
Hedonic habituation.
Huh.
And what it means, if I use a metaphor to explain it, if you imagine walking down a beautiful beach for the first time in your life, like, the best, most beautiful beach you've ever been on in your life, right? So the sand in your toes, you can hear the sea, sunshine and blue skies, all that stuff, right?
Love it.
Your brain is just firing. The stimulus is all over the place, dopamine, serotonin, and you feel incredible, like very present. You're noticing everything.
Yeah, yeah.
You're very aware.
Yeah.
You're very conscious in that moment.
Yeah.
If you do that same walk along the beach for the thousandth time, that same stimulation isn't happening.
Yeah.
You're not as present.
Yeah.
You're not as aware. You're not as conscious.
For sure.
And that's what happens the more that you do things.
Yeah.
There's, of course, benefits to doing with repetition because things become so ingrained.
Yeah.
But there's beauty in doing
the novelty of things.
Time.
I love that. All right. So what's the biggest takeaway you want our listeners to walk off this show from?
I mean, just to understand yourself.
I love that, man. Just know yourself. That's such a big one. I love that one.
Shakespeare, know thyself.
Yes. All right. Well, where can folks learn more about you and what you're doing?
So I suppose the Take Flight podcast.
Okay.
It's been going for 5 years. We just recorded a bunch of episodes. We got John Danaher on.
Oh, can't wait to hear that one.
Oh, yeah. Tim Kennedy came on. Matt Choi we did with yesterday.
Nice.
And then the founders of a brand called Super Coffee that you might be familiar with.
Yeah.
So those episodes will be coming out soon. The YouTube channel is the focus for this year. We've never really done too much in video, but now, like, you know, we filmed all the stuff at Roka. We filmed all the stuff here with
Nice.
So they're going to be coming out as vlog episodes.
Nice.
Where you can see the experience.
I like that.
And kind of live it vicariously through what we witnessed.
Absolutely.
So that's Take Flight with Mark, or Take Flight with Mark Whittle, but the handle is Take Flight TV on YouTube.
Got it.
And then MarkWhittle_TF on Instagram and other social channels.
Perfect. All right. We'll make sure we put all that stuff in our descriptions. All right, folks. Well, that's a wrap. Thank you for coming on. I really appreciate it. This was really, and there's so much. We just scratched the surface.
Yeah.
The next time you come to Austin, we'll have to have you back on again. Cool. I want to thank our audience for tuning in. I want to thank the men and women for holding the line. And I want to thank our sponsors for doing the things that they do. All right. Check out all my previous podcasts by visiting bulletproofworkshop.com. Learn more about me and training opportunities by visiting tridentconcepts.com. Until then, I'm Jeff Gonzalez, and you're listening to the Bulletproof Workshop podcast. Stay safe or be dangerous.